And indeed, I am recording the session. Welcome once again, guys. So this is week one of our program, Corporate Partnerships and Sponsorships. And this is our first Q&A. We're going to have Q&As for the next 6 weeks. So we're going to have Q&As every week for the next 6 weeks, this being week one of six. And you will receive, like you did this week, you're going to receive an email from me every Monday with a link to each, to that week's lesson, so that you can go through it, write down whatever questions come up. I really encourage questions, because I believe that questions improve the program for all of us, for everybody. There's only so much I can say when I teach, not because I don't want to say a lot, but because I've got my own bias. I'm human, so I focus on things that I think they really need to know this. So some of the things that I select, there may be things that you guys want to know that I may not have included in the recording, and I'm not saying that to scare you. Don't be scared at all. I'm just talking about just normal human bias. The things that I evaluate or appraise to be the most important things, and I'm sure they are, but there could be other things, you know, that are specific to your case, to your situation. So I think what I'm trying to communicate is that I love questions. I don't want you guys to hold back. Anything that comes to mind, just write it down. Send it through to me as a question so that we can tackle it during these sessions. Because my experience, this is the third group since I started sharing and teaching this material, and I've seen what questions can do to transform a program. So that's one. Two, one of the exercises I gave you for this week was a question around like your top 20 questions from this program. I think I'm gonna mute you just for a sec, Ruth. I see your mic is still unmuted. And I can hear the papers in the background because I'm sure you'll be taking notes. So I just muted you there. But at any time during the call, guys, I don't wanna be the only one talking. I just want you to know. I don't wanna be the only one talking. I really want this to be an engagement where we all talk. So I'll give you opportunities to unmute yourselves, to talk, especially when I'm addressing your questions, the questions that you would have sent me. I'd love to answer those questions in conversation with you. So this is going to be one of those. We're going to be having a back and forth conversation. So the other thing, as I was saying, I included in as a lesson for week one was the 20 questions. Let me explain to you why that's important. The reason I said 20 questions is because as we go through the program over the next 3 months, I use these questions that you guys would have written, and I would like you to send them to me. There's no pressure to send these to me today or tomorrow, but as soon as you can, as soon as you've written your questions, please send them through. Because as we go through the program, I use these as a checklist, if you like, to make sure that I covered things that are important to you specifically. Because all of us are here for our own reasons. We've got our own businesses, we've got our own projects, we've got our own things that are the reason we became part of this program. And I want to make sure that whatever that is for you specifically, we touch and answer those questions. So please do write those 20 questions. I know 20 is a lot. I know that. I was tempted to say 100. I've heard people like John DeMartini saying, you know, until you start getting at least 200, you haven't really, really dug deep enough. But I felt that I won't do that to you guys. We'll keep it at 20. Especially because we're a group, some of the questions you didn't ask, somebody else will ask in their 20. So I figured when we can do it like that, we will cover a lot of ground. So I think that's that on the questions. So in this week's lesson, obviously there were questions that there was an exercise where I said, go back through the program one more time and then note questions that relate to this week's lesson. And those are the questions that I'm going to be answering today. I'm not going to go through the 20 questions today, but I'm going to answer questions that relate specifically to this week's lesson. I hope that's clear. But if you didn't send questions, have no fear. Once again, you can put me on the hot seat. I'm here. You can ask your questions right now on this call. I don't always need to prepare in advance for some of these. So by all means, although I prefer it if you email questions, because I think that way you get the best answers out of me, because I would have a time to, you know, to pull out all the resources that support my answer to your question. But if that didn't happen, this is still a good platform to ask your questions. All right, so I'm just going through my email right now, looking through the emails that you guys sent me for the questions that you have for me. Some of these came late, so some of these actually came in this afternoon. So that's why I may not have seen them in advance, and I'll be seeing them for the first time right now. Lynn, I've got your email here. Maybe let's get you on the line, Lynn, if we can unmute you, because I've got your email right in front of me, and maybe we can start with your questions, if that's okay with you. Can you hear me? Oh, there you are. Great. Okay, so I've got your emails here, Lynn. Mm-hmm. I think you did send me another email. I think these are in addition to an earlier email you may have sent me yesterday. Is that correct? Because I remember seeing something from you.
So the first lot of questions, they were additional few in an email today, and then I sent another one today.
Okay, I lost you there for a sec. Can you just repeat what you just said?
Okay, so the first email I sent here was yesterday.
The nine questions.
There we go. And in addition to that, I sent a few more in two subsequent emails.
Okay, great. That's what I thought. That's what I have as well. So I received all your emails, basically.
Okay.
I just wanted to confirm that with you. So I'm going to pull out yesterday's questions. You okay. Said only nine questions. I like the subject line. Only nine. Not a lot.
Theo, do you mind if I just make a suggestion if it's in order with you?
No, sure. Go ahead.
I'd actually like to meet the ladies that are on the program with us. You know, just to understand what they do, you know, then, yeah, it's also nice and social.
I hear you. So that request has actually been made before. And and what I did was, with the previous group, I created what I call a notice board, basically a page where I ask people to submit their profiles, you know, okay, who they are, what they do, what kind of partnerships they're looking for, and so that everybody in the group can actually get to see what other people in the group do, who they are, what they do, and what kind of partnerships they're looking for. Would that be helpful?
Yeah, sure, without a doubt.
But does that satisfy your suggestion, or would you like more, a little bit more? You can be more specific. If there's something more that you would like, let me know so that we can see how we can make it happen.
I'd like to see their faces.
That's what I thought.
being in business is about relationships, so.
Okay. So, okay, maybe we can do that if that's what you guys want. I can also be on camera. Because I do these every week, I kind of get tired of being on camera, so I normally just do the audio version. But maybe for today, so that you guys can meet each other. Would that be okay? Would that be okay with you, Lynn, if we...
Yeah, just for today, and then... Just as an introduction, okay. We can switch off our cameras again.
Okay, just bear with me. Let me switch on the light so that I've got better lighting, and then I'm going to switch on my camera then. If you could just bear with me for just 1 sec. I'm going to stop the recording as well so that we don't have a lot of dead air.
That is geared towards the green economy, bringing entrepreneurs into the green economy. Thank you.
All righty.
Okay, I'll go next. I'm Ranjini. I do waste management and on-site recycling. So that is my passion, recycling and doing on-site waste management. That's what I do. That's the short version. Thank you.
Awesome.
And I live in Springs in Johannesburg.
Awesome. And Lynn lives in Cape Town.
Cape Town.
Yes.
Okay, so I'll go next. I'm Anthea Seafield. I am an HR consultant, but I want to be a... No, I not want to be. I am a life coach as well. My business is currently HR consultancy, but I want to branch out into life coaching, and I live in Pretoria. And I'm dealing with government taking away our electricity as well today.
Yeah. Welcome, Andrea. Who's next? Who wants to do a quick intro?
Okay, I'll come in.
Hey, Ruth.
Hi. My name is Ruth Mtavine. I'm from Kempton Park. I'm a certified mentor, business mentor, and a life coach. My areas of interest are around women in rural areas. And currently, I'm looking to start partnerships around supporting women who are recently retrenched due to the COVID-19 pandemic.
Nice one. Thank you, Ruth. Welcome to the program. Hey, Andrina, over to you.
Good afternoon, everyone. Apologies. I also just got load shed, so I can't share my camera. I'm literally dialing in from my phone. So my name is Andrina Williams, in the legal and compliance sphere, but areas of interest are socioeconomic development, particularly previously disadvantaged children and youth. So that's what I would want to venture in or learn more about in respect of this program and possibly get partnerships in that respect. Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Righty. Well, welcome, Andrina. Okay, guys. Now that we've done the intros, I'm also going to be off camera so that I can actually navigate the screens and be able to read your emails and answer your questions. Thank you, guys, for playing along and being on camera. I know it's not an easy thing to do when you are not planning to be on camera. All righty. Okay. So I started with your questions, Lynn. I don't know, can you unmute yourself once again so that we can look at your email here? Yeah. All right. Okay, great. I can see. I always want to see the mics. I want to be on the right screen. Okay, I see your email from yesterday. It says 9 questions, but I can't find the questions. It was, what? Do you know what time you sent this one? Because I thought the questions were actually in here, but I see it was a question about questions. What time did you send the first one? I've got the last two. Are all your questions in the last two emails that came in today? Or was there another one that had a question there?
There was one from yesterday, and that was at 11:46. Oh, shucks, I didn't attach it. Sia, can I share my screen?
Yes, please.
I don't know if this is going to work for me now. Host disabled participant sharing.
Let's see. Let's try.
Shall I send it to you quickly?
Please, if you can, please send it through. I'll look at your other emails in the meantime.
Okay.
Have you sent it to me?
No, I'm going to do that right now.
Okay, no pressure. Okay, so I see the other one was question 10, 11, and 12.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one was question 13, and I guess then 12.
Okay, so I have sent it.
Great. Okay, I'll just refresh my email while I wait for it. Okay, great. I've got it right here. Thank you. Okay. Okay. Tough questions you're asking here. Yeah. You don't play games, right? Pull no punches. Question number one, what is your understanding, definition of the new economy? Number two, only 42% of JSE listed companies are compliant with BBBE regulations. If this continues to happen without consequences, it limits opportunities to advance transformation, particularly enterprise and supply development, and the resultant lack of stimulation of economic development. How does one circumvent that, as it is critical to improving the lives of the poor, also creates opportunities for online conferences? Are ESG companies offering corporates opportunities to reduce their carbon emission by developing eco-entrepreneurs? Are corporates actually attempting to reduce their carbon taxes by greening their supply chains? Do I position my services of offering corporate enterprise development program to sustainability manager or ESG managers? Oh, sorry, let me read this again. Do I position my services of offering corporate enterprise development programs to sustainability manager or ESG managers? The spend on ESG of all corporates is 1% of is 1% of after-tax profits. This is material. It is. In your experience, are companies actually concerned with or committed to reducing carbon emissions? Would corporates be interested to sponsor programs that seek to develop eco-entrepreneurs that will reduce their carbon tax liability? Does the fact that I am a one-woman show operating in one province place me at a disadvantage? Would my work need to be in the same geographic area as the sponsor? Business takes place between and among people who are within the network of our ideal clients. How do I access those networks? Okay, so some of these questions, obviously, they don't fall within this week's lesson, but these are really, really good questions. We're gonna unpack these questions, obviously, as we go through the program. I'll answer some questions today, but we're gonna unpack these as we go, which is what I said earlier when we started the call. Those of you who just joined us, what I said is that one of the exercises for this week was the 20 questions. The reason for the 20 questions is so that I can have a checklist of things that are most important to you, so that by the end of this program, or as we go towards the end, I'm able to always go back to check that we covered the things that are most important to you over and above the things that I brought to the program because I believed were the most important things to focus on. So again, I want to emphasize, please continue to fill in, to kind of write down those 20 questions that that I requested on this week's lesson. So which questions am I going to tackle here before I move on? I'm not going to answer all of these today, but I can answer one or two, and then I'll move on to someone else's questions. But I want to focus, if you've already sent me your questions that relate to this week's topic, by all means, please point me in that direction. So after this, I will then jump into your questions. But let me take care of these right now. So some of these questions, as I said, will be answered within the program. Question number one, what is my understanding or definition of the new economy? That's a very good question. So for me, what the new economy is, my take, if I may be honest with you, is that if you look at the changes of the last 15, 20 years, every kind of 3-year, 5-year period, we've been kind of entering what one would call the new economy. But if we bring things straight to today, there are multiple definitions that I kind of assign to what I call new economy. One of these is something you touched on, being a one-woman business, for instance. Mm-hmm. What we're starting to see a lot of, and it's not a new thing, but the trend is rising rapidly over the years, where the business now is becoming the person. You know, a lot of people who have got expertise, who have got experience, who have got the know-how, who have got areas where they can solve problems or bring solutions. What we're seeing is that a number of these people, they're not feeling the pressure of, I have to build a traditional type of business, where I have to have an office, where I even need business cards for that matter, where I have to have employees. So that whole question of, how big is your company? How many people do you have? Because that question was always asked, not necessarily from a point of how many jobs have you created, but it was asked from, we need to gauge your size on based on the number of people you employ. These days, that's no longer a yardstick to measure businesses, because people work alone, and if they need teams, their teams can be anywhere in the world, and those teams can actually be working from home in their own right, wherever they may be in the world. So the business right now is kind of narrowing down to the expert. So the expertise is becoming the business. And another, in the context of this program, the reason why I said in the new economy for the context of the program, is really to emphasize the importance of how small businesses, or how as small businesses, we need to relook at ourselves. Because now I'm saying, hey, let's look at ways to partner with corporates. A lot of people have never thought about this. And the reason they never thought about it was because they thought, gee, who am I? I'm just me. I'm just good old little me with my little business in my little corner. What corporate would want to partner with me? And I think where I'm trying to focus this is that a lot of people, I don't want to say a lot of you, but a lot of you in general, a lot of us have worked in corporates. When we were there, we were getting paid for our brains, for our expertise, for the work we were doing, but we were still responsible for delivering the outcome that the company was selling to its clients. You know, if you're an accountant, for instance, you do that work. It's you who does the work. You are the brains. So why does it change when you do that for yourself? So I'm really trying to get people to reappraise their value and understand that they are worth more than they think they are, and they're a big part of the economy. So you could partner with a corporate even if you are an individual. You don't have to be big. And also, even if you don't have a business, as it's happening with some of our programs now, that some people don't have businesses. They are, I mean, when I started this in June, I had a lady who who's got a degree, who's got a social worker by training, who's also a dietitian from an academic standpoint. She never worked in any of those spaces. She's a housewife currently. Right now, I think about 7-8 weeks into the program, she's got proposals that are being discussed by large corporations because she decided to put together a booklet based on nutrition, which could be partnered up with a food company. So she's got a big frozen vegetables company that is looking at this. But on the side, she also had another idea, which is a perfect fit for the automotive industry, where she is having back and forth email conversations with two CEOs of some of the biggest car manufacturers in the world, BMW South Africa, Toyota South Africa. She is talking to those CEOs. She's a housewife. She's at home. She doesn't have a registered business, but she's got ideas that can be partnered up. So that was really what I wanted to bring to people's attention, to redefine what they think business is in the context of the broader economy. So it was specifically for this. So that's my definition, Ellen. I do believe it could be broadened, but for the purpose of this, I just wanted to focus us on things that matter to us as individuals who are within the program. So that's my answer to your question one. I'll skip question two for now. There is one other question I wanted to touch on that I felt it would be beneficial for today's session if I addressed. I think one of those was number eight, where you say, does the fact that I'm a one woman show operating in one province place me at a disadvantage? My answer would be no. I think I would give you two answers, actually. I would say it depends, and then I would also say no. It depends. It would depend on what it is you are doing in this partnership, and in terms of deliverables, are there things that would require you to be physically at a place, you know, closer to the company that you partnered with? I'm going to use, for instance, Ranjini. Her business, the waste management business, she actually drives to her clients, you know, because she does on-site waste management. So it's important for what she does to actually go to physically to their premises to be able to execute some of the things that she does for them as clients. So, but for most businesses, even if that's the case, if it's not something you have to do daily or weekly, then it doesn't matter because South Africa is just, you are just 2 hours away from pretty much from most places, at least in South Africa, like the major cities, they're just two hours apart at max. So the issue of geography, I don't think it's a thing from that point of view. Mm-hmm. And then if we're talking about, because you work with other businesses, if you're asking this question from a point of, because I work with businesses, let's say in the Western Cape, do you think a company in Joburg would want to support me if what I do only benefits businesses in the Western Cape? My answer there would still be no, because the same company, you know, has offices in the Western Cape, you know. So they still have a branch there. It may be a disadvantage if you think from a decision-making point of view, where let's say the person you're dealing with in the Western Cape, depending again on the level of partnership, where they don't have the authority to commit to a partnership with you. I've never had that problem, to be quite honest with you. When I started my partnership with Nedbank, I was based in the Western Cape. And all these 10 years, 12 years actually, that I've partnered with them, even after I moved to Joburg, my contact person within Nedbank is still in the Western Cape because we've built this long-term relationship where we've done a lot of things. So it I've never had a problem with that because there are always regional representatives, local representatives who could make decisions at least to get you in. When I partnered with Old Mutual, interestingly, even though I was based in the Western Cape, already had a relationship with Nedbank, when I wanted the partnership with Old Mutual, the decision makers were in Joburg. So I just flew up to Joburg, because I was based in Cape Town at the time, flew up to Joburg, met with them, and the deal was done and work happened. So operating in one province, I don't think it's a disadvantage. Being a one woman show, also that is actually not a disadvantage. In some way, it's an advantage for you because it means you can actually make decisions quicker. When companies are offering you options, you don't have to go back to consult your team or a group of people because you are the business. You just make a decision within a day if you don't want to make it on the spot. So in some way, it is an advantage. The thing I want you guys to think about when you think about partnerships is always remember that corporates, they're entering any partnership for their benefit first. They're always thinking about what's in it for them. So as long as that part is clear, which we're going to try and really tighten up during this program, as long as that part is clear, the rest is they're usually just happy to go with either you, a company, as an individual, a group of people. It usually doesn't, it usually doesn't really matter much. And again, it's based purely on my experience, like everything I'm going to talk about in this program. I'd rather talk about what I know, what I've done, than to come here and talk to you guys about things I have no knowledge of. So every answer I give you will always be based on what I've done, and everything I teach you will be based on that. So I think those are the questions I'm going to touch on for you, Lynn, today. And then we're going to come back to these as we go. Some of these, we may not actually even have to come back to them because as the program goes, the answers will be within the lessons of the program. That's what I've found with previous groups. Can I, is there at least one question? Is there another question that you think you'd like me to answer before I move on, Lynn, from your list of questions? Or are you happy with the two?
I'm fine. If you say we're going to touch on all of those things eventually, then I'll be patient.
No worries. Okay, cool. So nothing pressing in that regard for today?
No.
All righty. Cool. Thank you. And the next set of questions that I received was from you, Salima. Can you unmute yourself, Salima? I see you are on the call.
I'm gonna do that. Hi, Sia.
Hello. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you.
Awesome. Okay, I received your questions. I've got question one and exercise number one and exercise number three.
Yes.
I'm quickly going to just skim through like I did with Lynn. I'm going to skim through the rest of these because I know that they form part of your 20 questions. I'm going to quickly go through them and then I'll select one or two that I want to tackle now. But I can already see some of these will be answered as the program goes. So continue to add more because you've got 12 so far. Continue to add more as they come up. I know it is a challenging exercise for me.
Yes.
And for a lot of us. Yeah. Okay, so let me go through your questions. The first one is how do we approach the corporate? Two, to whom do we address the request? How do we grab the attention of the sponsor without being a pest, get the foot in the door? How to engage the prospect? How to create a win-win situation? How do we create the small talk before asking for the request? Good, great question. How to start conversation or email? How to get the sponsor to respond if they don't reply? How to ask the prospect to talk about what they really, I think you meant what they're really looking for, because you say, yeah, what they're really booking for. I think that's what you meant to say, what they're really looking for. Great question. Yeah. How do you tie your request with the corporation when your activity I'm not sure, when your activity and theirs don't match, is that what you were asking?
So what I mean by that is that supposing I go to a mining company, which I know has a lot of money, but I'm doing something that's not related to their kind of work as in mining, but I want to be, I need money for land or, you know, something like that.
Get it.
Okay. So it's totally different, but how would we match the two so that it becomes a way that they would be interested in what I'm actually needing?
I get you. Perfect. Okay. So the next one is how to push the envelope without offending the prospect. How will you know the deal? How will you know the deal is for you or not? Gee, these are great questions. Okay. I'm not sure which of these I should answer, to be honest, because as I was going through them, I'd already know that in the program, actually they are answered. So I think I'll leave I'll probably just leave all your questions because I don't want to jump the gun because I'm taking you guys through the process within the program. So almost all of these questions are actually answered because even the way you ask them, they follow a sequence, as you can see. So these will already be answered within the program. So continue to write more and just send them through that if any of these are not answered in the program, we will answer during our Q&As towards the later weeks of the program. So I'll leave this here. Are you okay with that? Are you happy to wait?
Yes, I am happy to wait, yeah.
Okay, perfect. Right. I don't think I received any other questions from you guys. I think these are the only ones I remember receiving. If I did and I forgot your questions, please by all means unmute yourself and remind me so I can pull them out. If that's not the case, you guys can ask questions now based on this week's material, because that's what this call is about. It's a Q&A so that you guys can say, Sia, on the material, you said this, can you clarify this part or whatever the case. So this is basically your turn now to unmute yourselves. Tell me if you've already sent me questions that I did not see, or if you've got questions from this week's material that you'd like to ask so that we can answer them right now.
Hi, Sia. It's Anthea here. So as I went through the material, one of the key things that just struck me was this thing about not being needy. And so when you are needy, how do you not be needy type of thing? Because I think that's one of the key things in getting to the right you know, the mental model, what's the mental model that you then need to have?
That's a very good question. Thank you, Anthea. I think it starts, first of all, by breaking down what it means to be needy. When we say we are needy, it's usually because we are under pressure of some sort. I need this deal. Right, we usually say things like I have to get this deal. I need this deal. That may be the feeling, but the reality is that how many times have we not gotten the things that we said we need, and we were still here? Let me go to the extreme of what needy means to me. Needy, when you need. I'll use an example just to clarify the point. A baby needs its mother. A three-week-old baby is completely dependent on its mother for pretty much everything, for feeding, because the baby cannot take care of itself. As adults, we do feel pressure and we always have options. It may not always seem that way because the pressure's here, bills have to be paid, month end is here, all of these things. And we get ourselves into that state of panic and stress and all of that. And that's our definition of needy. But the reality is that we're not needy. Even the deal is itself that we are negotiating with this company, whether it's a sale, whether we are going there to sell something, or we are working on a partnership, we are actually not needy. We may want it badly, but we are not needy. So coming back to the, so for me, it starts with that, to say no matter how bad things are, I'm not needy of this. Yes, I want it. It would be great if I can get it, because it would really solve a lot of problems in my life. But what's going to happen if I don't get it? What happens if a baby is left unattended for a week, for instance? Of course, we don't want to think about that. But that's complete neediness in on the part of the baby, because it can, the baby cannot do anything about not getting what it's completely dependent on someone else for. But what do we do as business people? What do we do as adults? We make another plan. So we are never really, really needy as we would like to think. So that's number one. Number two, the danger of allowing yourself or of accepting that you are needy when you are going to negotiate. The danger of it is that it betrays you. Your neediness betrays you when you are negotiating with a prospective partner or a prospective client. And what that then does, not only does it make them sometimes a bit uncomfortable, because they're like, there's just something off about the energy. because we bring energy, we carry energy into the things we do, whether we believe it or not, but we do, right? And that energy makes people feel a certain way when they're talking to you. Secondly, in the way we communicate, when we're in a state of neediness, we become desperate. We start talking from a place of desperation. And we start doing deals we would not do, which down the line end up being deals we wish we had not done. Even though at the time we did them, we thought, gee, I need this, I'll take whatever they give me. And then later on, you're like, actually, I shouldn't have. And we see this. I mean, one of the people that come to mind, like a really big scenario that comes to mind, is a gentleman called Stan Lee, who basically was the main man behind Marvel Studios. Like all of these comics that the whole world loves, these multi-billion dollar comics, were creations of Stan Lee. But because he was needy in the late 70s, he ended up selling that whole catalog of his work, and then it was owned by a bigger corporation. And as it turned out, the comic world actually grew, where some of these things that he wrote became these big blockbuster movies that raked in billions, where he had absolutely no say. And at the time when this thing was breaking out, he had no money. Because he was needy and he sold too early for next to nothing, he was left basically as a sad case, because he didn't understand the value that of his own work, so to speak. So the reason I warn people about being needy or in our first program is because it's not because I want you to drive a hard bargain when you negotiate with corporates, but I also don't want you to undervalue yourself, because the world will always take you up on your own appraisal of yourself. If you don't know the value that you bring, other people will take advantage of that. And another reason I brought this up, which is part of the mental model that you asked for, is that when you go into a deal, understand and accept one thing, that more than one answer is a possibility. By that I mean, you can get a yes, you can get a no, you can get a maybe, or something else. The sooner you can resolve and accept that if you get a no, you'll be okay with that, what I've found is that that usually centers you. That usually takes care of that extreme of going in the needy direction. Because if you could say to yourself, will I be okay if they say no to this? First of all, you're taking pressure off yourself. You're okay with no. And you will see as the program goes, when I talk about what do you say in a meeting, one of the things I'll be teaching you is to actually invite a no early with in a negotiation, in a conversation. Invite a no early. Because sometimes, because people think you are desperate, there are many ways where they can actually string you along on a deal that they actually have no desire to do, or no desire to do on your terms. But when you say to somebody, feel free to say no, in using the words, of course, that I'm going to be teaching in the program, when you say to people that it's okay, if this is not for you guys, please be comfortable, just tell me no. That usually actually helps you, because it shows a sign of, you know, I'm not attached to this outcome. And people tend to respect that. If anything, what I've seen with the deals I've done is that it tends to actually switch neediness to their side. Because when they see that you're actually not desperate for this, they start to say, gee, what is it about this that makes this person so confident that they've got something of value that they're okay to take a no, because they'll move on to the next, you know, prospective client. And that's been my experience with some with corporates. You know, because when they look at you, they think, oh, just a small business person. Okay, what do they want? Blah, blah. They need us. But when they actually see that you don't need them, they start to wonder, what are you counting on? Are you going to take this to their competitor? They start to look closely at what you're proposing, and they start taking you seriously. So even when you are needy, I think that's the message I want to emphasize. Even when you are needy genuinely, it actually doesn't help anyway to act that way. You know, you might as well have posture. You know, you might as well have posture of not being needy. Because what's the point of being needy? What's the point of carrying that and transferring that energy and bringing that energy to a discussion when it's actually not even going to work in your favor? You might as well have a posture of, you know what? I'll accept a no, and I'll invite a no. So that if they're going to say no, you'd rather that you get that no early. And then you decide what you're going to do with it. Because when you get a no, somebody once said, there's no negotiation until somebody says no. Because if you ask something and somebody says yes, there's no negotiation needed. It becomes just a discussion of terms. And then if there's a disagreement on those terms, then there's a negotiation around that. But what triggers a negotiation is somebody saying no. But if somebody says yes, there's no negotiation. So the sooner you can get a no, the sooner you can decide what your next step of action should be. Whether let's negotiate because I think they're missing something here, or okay, thank you, because I've got other places I need to go with this. So you can make decisions quicker and you could change your plans quicker. But what it does, it actually still gives the power back to you. So the whole thing about neediness, it actually absolutely never helps people, even when they are needy, because nobody gives you a deal because they feel sorry for you. You know, if anything, they want to run away from you. When you say, oh my God, I really need this deal because I need to pay bills this month and I have to have this deal now, nobody's going to do it. It's going to do business because of that. So it's pointless. It actually doesn't help. So we might as well. One of the things I've created is a one-page negotiation checklist. I think I sent to you guys. I think I emailed you my one-page negotiation checklist, which talks about, you know, how to kind of prepare your mind before you go into a negotiation for a partnership. So if you could check that out. And I think within the commandments that I was talking about here, I actually covered most of it. Envia, maybe let's bring you back on. I hope I didn't miss your question on neediness. Can you unmute yourself?
Yeah, I was just pressing the wrong place again. I get it in terms of neediness. You did answer my question. And in terms of the mental model of not necessarily of your own appraisal of yourself is what other people will take. I think that's a crucial one. But when you are starting out, like most of us are starting out, and you don't necessarily have a track record in a specific area. So for instance, I want to move into the life coaching side where I don't necessarily have a track record. What are the key, what are the critical skills that you need to have to be able to make partnerships work for you?
I almost jumped to give an answer to that question, but let me understand, in your case, as you think about partnerships for life, is it life coaching?
Yeah.
Okay. As you think about partnerships for life coaching, because there are so many possible types of partnerships, in this case, give me an example of what you would call a partnership that could work for you in your life, in your life coaching business, so that I can give you an answer.
Okay, so key for coaches to get clients in and to get a steady stream of clients, and clients that can pay, you know. So one of the key things is then, when you want to approach, for instance, a financial institution, to say, let us work together. I provide a service to your clients. That is a value add to them and from you. So what is the key skills that I would need to have to be able to, one, put together such a deal, and two, sell the idea?
Brilliant. Great question. Great question. Okay. I've got a few answers around this, or should I say examples? So, last year, let me start with one, with the first example. Last year, I partnered with NetBank, where I approached them and I offered a breakfast and learn session. And what I said to them was, would it help you guys? I don't remember the exact wording that I used, but what I do remember is that I always came from a place of a giver. And I talk about that in the program, that the best way to approach corporates or anyone for that matter that you want to partner with is not going to them with a begging bowl to say, please give me, please help me, please, please, please. That never really works. It works sometimes, but it's never the best way to approach. And it doesn't work most of the time. Let me not say never, but it doesn't work most of the time. What works best with humans is being a value provider, a value giver, a value add, which is what your question is. So I approached NetBank and I said to them, guys, I've been doing something in my business that has been tremendously helpful. And I've also helped some of my clients do the same thing, and it was tremendously helpful to them too. Here's what it is. If as a business owner, you service businesses, or in fact, even if you don't service businesses, but if you're a business owner, it always helps to have premium clients. And I explained to them what the various benefits of having premium clients are. And I asked them, do they think it could benefit their clients if they could learn a way to attract and close deals with premium clients based on the benefits that I had outlined? They were like, whoa, gee, we would like, I'm sure our clients would like that. How can they get this from you? And I said, no, it's easy. I'd be more than happy to come and to, granted, I already had a relationship with NetBank. But then after I did that with NetBank, I approached another bank that I had no relationship with. Because it had already worked with NetBank, I approached another bank, reached out to them, and all I said to them was, I did this with NetBank. You know, this is what I did with them. I showed them the letter, the invite letter that I had sent, which I would be more than happy to show you if you want to see it, with the benefits of, you know, when because I wrote the letter that NetBank sent out to invite people to the breakfast and learn, because I knew the benefits. I knew that the person receiving that letter as a business owner, who's a potential client to me, when they read that, they'll be like, geez, I want this. But where am I going with these examples? Where I'm going is, instead of going to banks or in financial institutions saying, I want to offer your clients life coaching, that's broad, that's vague. They don't know what that means. Nobody knows what life coaching means because it means different things to different people. So what I would do, I would look at what is it about life coaching that can benefit the bank or the financial institution's client, and such that the institution itself would be happy for their client to have that benefit. I'm going to make stuff up now because I'm thinking on my feet. Let's just say, because of COVID, you know, and everything that's going on right now in our lives as people, there are a lot of financial pressures that people are feeling. And as a life coach, depending on the model that you use, there could be things there that help people get a better perspective of their situation. I'm making stuff up, Anthea, forgive me. But there could be things there that give people a different perspective, such that if they could learn, let's say, a mental model from your system, and they use that, it would help them to, I guess, to feel better, I don't know, or to approach their finances differently, or to budget differently, or to reduce their expenses in some way. I don't know. But let's just say there's something there that could be a benefit to their consumer, to their customer. I would pull out that thing, and then I would reach out to the corporate, and I would talk about this problem, that because of the situation that's happening in the world in our lives right now, people are experiencing this, and that. And I've got this ability or this skill to help people feel the opposite or a better way or less stressed or whatever, or more focused or whatever the case, in such a way. And this is how it would impact their finances, because everything can be linked to our finances if you really look closely. This is how it would impact their finances. And would you guys be happy to give this gift to your people? Then the question from the bank will be, what is this going to cost us, right? And then you say, well, actually, it's not going to cost you anything. All you have to do, unfortunately, you can't do a lunch and a breakfast and learn or lunch and learn now because of social distancing. So you say, all you have to do is to organize a Zoom call where I can come and speak to them for 30 minutes or whatever time. That's basically all. You know, I don't want you to send me your clients. Organize everything. And I'm even happy to write an invitation letter that you guys can send where I explain the value so that they can decide for themselves, meaning the customer, they can decide for themselves if they want to attend this thing. Because if you write the invite yourself, it will be structured so that it appeals, it lands correctly than if you leave it to the bank to write the invite. Because if the bank writes the invite, they'll say, we're having Anthea, she's a life coach, she's coming to speak to you, are you interested? And most people will be like, oh, not interested. But if you write the invite, if you write the invite, you will highlight the problem. When somebody reads that, they're like, geez, that's my problem. And then you highlight the sort of the benefits of coming to this event where you're going to be teaching them the solution. Then they say, gee, I'd love to learn this. Oh, it's only 30 minutes and it's free. I gotta attend. So then they attend the thing. And then when you do your event, you offer something where these people can actually give you their details. Either you send them to a landing page where you say, go download my 5-step daily morning ritual to help you, whatever. Okay. Again, I'm making stuff up. You would know what that would be. So you offer them this, you send them to this free, to this landing page where they go there, they put their email address, they download this thing for free, you get the email address and telephone number, or you do what I've been doing lately, which I've never done before, where I invited people, I gave people my number and said, just WhatsApp me, which is what you did. And you know, I've never done this whole WhatsApp thing. I was testing it now, and I must say it's been very interesting. What I've observed from people I've spoken to via WhatsApp is that people who reached out, they actually honor those calls. I have never had a no-show when somebody said, please, can I talk to you? So you would do the same. You would, while you're doing this Zoom call with the bank's clients or the financial institution's clients, you could offer something else so that these people can reach directly to you to get their gift, because you want their details. Because what the bank is not going to do, they're not going to send you a list of who attended that thing. And you don't want to ask for it. You don't want to ask for it. But you'd rather people reach, you'd rather be so good that the people who experienced your value are the ones who are reaching out to you. Because all the financial institution did was to create a platform for you. So far, does it make sense?
Definitely.
Okay, another thing I want to add, I know this was not your question, but I want to add this, because especially in the coaching space, I think all of us in business, there are things I feel we need to always keep in mind. Our clients are not, they don't wake up thinking about us and our solutions. But what they wake up with are their problems. So what's happening in people's minds and people's heads is that they are consumed by their issues, their problems, their frustrations, whatever they may be. For instance, if you, let's just say you sell financial products to people, they don't wake up saying, I'm looking for this product, that insurance. But what they wake up worrying about is that my child is now doing grade 10. In 2 years, my daughter will be in matric. And then a year after that, she's going to go to university. I'm worried. How am I going to finance university with my current income? So let's just say you sell insurance. It doesn't help to reach out to that person and just say, do you want to buy insurance? Or education policy or whatever the case. It doesn't help. But here's what will help, is understanding who your target clients are and what issues they are grappling with, and start a conversation where they're already having a conversation in their own heads. So you could write, for instance, a 1-page article that you share with the target audience that you want, where, or you could even do this, what I said, where you partner with a large organization to say, I want to talk to some of your, you know, some of your clients who may have kids going to university in the next three to five years, because I want to talk about ways they could start, you know, putting together a plan so that they'll be able to afford this. The reason why that works is because it's pitched at the level of the problem. But the mistake we make, most of us, is that when we sell our services, or when we think about selling or partnering with companies or offering our services, we tend to be consumed by what we do. We tend to want to talk about, oh, this is what I do. I've been doing it for so long. I've got this experience, but that people don't know you yet. And they're not that interested in your story. They're interested in their story. So when you're looking for clients, be clear who the clients are that you're looking after, you're going after, because you can't say anybody. That's the worst way to get a client. So define the market you want to go after, because when you can do that, you'll be able to know the conversations they're already having with themselves. The same applies in our program right here. What I'm going to be teaching you guys is that you can't just have a list of companies that you want to partner with and then just write a generic email and just send it to all of them. Nobody's going to respond. Well, maybe some people will, but that's the worst way to reach out to companies. One of the things I'm going to be talking about in the program is what I call context. Because people, when they receive your email, they're asking themselves, who are you? Why are you writing to me? And why are you writing to me specifically? All right? So the second question is, why are you writing to me? So what's this about, in other words? But then the next question is, why are you writing to me specifically? And you need to be able to, you need to answer that very early in your email. When you can do that, when people read your email and they know that you're actually writing it to them, and they're the only one in the world who to whom this context applies, then you will get a response. But anyway, I'm jumping the gun. We're gonna cover that in the program. So I guess the point really is, don't get too consumed by what you do. Look outside, because what you do, imagine if you were a doctor. Imagine if you were a doctor and you were consumed by your medication. You were like, ooh, I've got this, I've got Panado, right? And this is the best pill in the world. And you wake up in the morning wanting to every patient who walks through your office, you say, have you had Panado? Because it's the best pill in the world. Nobody cares. They'll be like, this doctor's crazy. But what do doctors do? They know that you're walking in because you're consumed by your problem as a patient, by your pain. They say, what's the problem? And then they let you talk about your pain and they stay there. They diagnose you. They haven't even talked about a prescription yet. And then once they've diagnosed you, firstly, they've asked you questions. And some of their questions will be leading questions, you know, to say, what else? How about this? So you've got this pain behind your ear. Do you also feel a pain in your elbows in the morning when you wake up? And you're like, I didn't think there was a link between the pain behind my ear and the pain on my elbow. But this doctor clearly knows what he's talking about, because I didn't mention the elbow pain, but the fact that he's asking it means it's linked to my ear pain. I didn't think the two were connected. So now your level of trust towards the doctor goes up, because you're saying, gee, this guy knows things I didn't tell him. And the more questions he asks, especially questions that are leading, the more confidence you tend to have in his ability to solve your problem. That's what we need to be doing with our clients too. Rather than before they even finish their hello, we want to offer them what we sell. That's the worst approach. Too early. That's basically like a doctor, when you walk into their office, they've got their prescription pad in hand. They say, I know exactly what's wrong. Here's a prescription. Take this, go take this, without doing diagnosis. So prescription before diagnosis is malpractice in the doctor's world. It's the same in business. So that's why context is so important when we do these outreaches. Start where they are. That's a long answer to a question you didn't ask me, Anthea. But I just found that it could be beneficial to the rest of the group, because all of us have something to offer. Did that make sense, Anthea?
Yes, definitely, Sia.
Great, thank you. Okay, guys, who else? We're gonna be around till about 6:30. So I'm still gonna take a few, maybe one or two more questions that you guys may have for me. Any questions?
Sia, would you mind if I have another question?
Go for it.
That relates to something I didn't ask previously. From the material, you talk about the second commandment, thou shalt research and focus. Ah. Now, just see where I'm going with this. The research...
I actually don't know, but I remember somebody asking me about this question, but I want to hear your question.
So the research one can probably do through reviewing financial information online and, you know, the company's brands and so on and so forth.
Yes.
It's not always that easy to identify what that the desire is of that prospect. So you may have, as an example, position who's there to earn a salary, essentially.
I lost you there. I'm so sorry, Lynn. I lost you there for a sec. You cut off. Can you repeat your question again? This just the last part.
Sure. So how do you, when you're approaching someone whose heart is just not in this thing that he's doing, if it's an ESD manager, all he wants is numbers. Mm. You know, how do you identify then what the desire would be for that person? Are you with me?
I am with you. There's a number of things you can do. So if, for instance, you know who the person is, you need to, who's the right contact person. Let's say you already know this ESD manager. So what would I do? Let me answer it from that point of view. What would I do? So what I would do a simple Google search, find out what I can find on him, firstly, that's in the news, whether now or last year, whatever I can come up, whatever I can find, what am I looking for? I'm looking for maybe a news article where the company was quoted talking about, you know, their commitment to ESDs, the, you know, what's important to them about developing small businesses, blah, 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 because companies are talking all the time. It's just that we don't pay enough attention to, well, not that we don't pay enough attention. And also we miss some things that are in the news where they may be quoted one liner. One of the things I was talking about to my other group, I pulled out a story from 2013 when Vodacom was starting to really focus on small businesses. And there was an article in Business Day where this, their CEO for this division, a guy called Vuyani Jahana, who was the CEO of SAA, he was at Vodacom back then, where he was quoted. There was a whole article that Vodacom, they want to focus on small businesses. And the CEO was quoted that, you know, when I enter this space, I'd be more than happy to share the article with you guys. And I was just sharing with people that all of these stories are all around us. Companies are talking every day. They don't talk through their annual reports. They don't talk only in their websites, but they get quoted in media. Could be last year. Do you think if somebody was quoted last year saying something that relates to the problem you solve, you can solve for them? Do you think it's too late? Absolutely not. Because you will say to him, I saw, when I was, you know, doing a bit of search about you guys, I saw that on this date, you were quoted in this media saying this. First of all, people get flattered, by the way, when somebody notices things they say in the media. Strange, but true. Because these guys and these ladies in corporates, they're just human, like us. They get flattered. They get. They love when people notice things that elevate them. And this works not just for managers. It works for CEOs. It works for some of the most powerful people. Some of the emails I've written to people like Raymond Ackerman, to Mark Lambetti, and some of these guys, they started with me congratulating them on things they've done. Like I congratulated Raymond Ackerman on starting the entrepreneurship school at UCT, at the Graduate School of Business. Do you think if I could write to him right now and I congratulate him on the work and the impact that has had on young people, do you think it would be too late? No, of course not. It's still relevant. Because nobody is writing to him to compliment him on good things that they do. So I look for those things. When I do research, I pretty much look for everything I can find on this person so that it becomes a nice connector to where I want to go with my proposal or proposition or my ask. And I link it to something they cannot deny. The key for me is that it needs to be something that is true, that is undeniable. Yes, I did say that. You know, and if you've read a book by Robert Cialdini called Influence, you will know that humans, one of the tools of influence is something called commitment and consistency. Once people make a public declaration on anything, human nature is such that when somebody brings that, what they said, they want to be consistent with their word, particularly if it's something that is positive. They want to be consistent. Oh, yes, yes, we did say that we care about small businesses and we are, you know, we're a caring business. We want to support them. So it's almost like you are asking them to live up to the reputation that they were creating for themselves. So I would look beyond their financials. because a lot of stuff that's there is not really them talking. You know, they're just reporting and covering certain parts of themselves to their shareholders and other stakeholders. But when they talk to the media, they're promoting themselves. So that's why it's always a good place to pull out the thing where they were gloating and trying to make themselves look good to the world. I don't know if that answers you to some extent, Lynn.
Definitely. Now, just another quick one. Is LinkedIn a platform that one can use to kind of find who you need to find and then maybe privately engage them with information they talk about and so on?
Another great question. And the answer is absolutely yes. So in week 4, I talk about that, week 4 or week 5, I'm not sure. But I talk about that, where to find some of these people and how to track them, because that's another thing. You see the list of companies that you wrote down in your 20, in your exercise for this week. The next thing, we want to track those companies. We want to start noticing things they say. And I talk about that in upcoming weeks. So the short answer is absolutely, absolutely. And another thing is, basically, to add to your question or to answer, to agree with something you kind of touched on, look what they say on those profiles on LinkedIn. Look at the things they post, because usually people, when they get featured in the media, they will actually take that and attach it on their LinkedIn to show that I was featured in Business Day and da da da. So look at those things as well. So yes, so as part of your research, when you know that person, go deep and look at what they are saying, because some of the things are just the words they're using in their profile, where they talk about how much they care about this and this and this and that. So when you quote people on things they said, somehow it just works in some amazing ways. That would be my answer to that one. Any 4 minutes to go. Any last question from you guys? Salima, you have a question? I see your mic is unmuted.
Now, I'm just listening. I think some of the questions that I had in my written format was actually answered in what you were saying today. So I really appreciate that. One of them was how to engage and make conversation with your prospect, and you've actually totally covered that so nicely. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm glad. Thank you very much. So before we close, guys, if we don't have any questions, there is a question that I have for you, which was a request that was sent to me today by people within the group. There are people who are on their way from work at 5 o'clock when we start our Q&As on Thursdays, like this session basically. And they were asking if it would be possible to do these at 5:30. So I thought I would bring it to you guys to tell me. You can even use the chat if you want, if you don't want to unmute yourself. Can we just go to our chats? Would you mind if we move it to 5:30? So that's the question. Would you mind if we move it to 5:30? If you don't mind, just say no on the chat. You can make it private to me if you want, or you could just chat, which will be public for everybody. Just say no if you don't mind. If you do mind, maybe 5:30 does not work for you because you have to be somewhere, you know, by 6:30. So it may be a problem. Just say yes, it's not, yes, you do mind, because it's not gonna work. So the no's will, if we've got all no's, then we'll move the time to 5:30. But if some of you feel yes, it's a problem to move it to 5:30, then I think we may just have to keep it at 5, and then we'll always have a recording, just so you guys don't panic. We'll always have a recording for this session. So I'm gonna check your chats. Do you mind if we move it to 5:30? And let's see. I've got your messages here. No, no, no. Bye-bye, all. Okay. All right. Okay. I think Lynn has already left before I brought this one up. How do you get corporates to listen? Oh, there was a question from Hendrina. Sorry, Hendrina, I didn't see your question.
Yeah, but I think you essentially covered me. I was about to unmute, but when the Q&A happened, I think I got a gist of it. So you answered me. Thank you.
Alrighty.
But if there's additional contributions, I wouldn't mind. But with Selini and Ranjini's questions, I think you've covered the queries I had in my mind.
Okay, no, great stuff. But don't worry, and this question will be answered. I'll show you the process. How do you approach them? How do you write to them? How do you talk to them? So I will cover it for sure. So I'll spend a lot of time talking about that. Okay, I see that not everybody has been able to respond. Maybe some people have already left. So I will take this offline again, and I'll follow up with people whose responses I did not receive so that I can make a decision whether we move this to 5:30 or we leave it at 5 o'clock. I think on that note, guys, I will leave you. I think we can leave it here.
Thank you.
So that you can continue with your evening. And I will put this up. What day is it today? It's Thursday. I will put this up before Monday. I don't like to overcommit and say tomorrow. I'll make sure that by Monday, when you receive your week 2's lesson, this will already be there. And it will be there for a long time. So you'll be able to review it as for a very long time. All right. So on that note, ladies, I almost said ladies and gents, but it's only ladies. Ladies, I think we'll wrap it up here. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.